You've got other places to be. So, good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I'm opening a meeting of the Joint Committee on Ways and Means Subcommittee on General Government. Today is Wednesday, May 20th, and we will be hearing today. It's an informational meeting from the Secretary of State Audits Division regarding their audit on revenue management and collection. And I would note for those listening at home or interested in following along that the presentation materials for this are in the agenda for the May 14th meeting of this committee, since we had originally planned to hear this then, but the other presentation took some time. Mr. Borden, anything before they get started? Come on up.
Chair Steiner Hayward, members of the committee. My name is Gary Blackmer, the director of the Secretary of State Audits Division. My duties here today are simply to introduce Jamie and let her continue with the presentation and be around if there's any questions that she can't answer.
Thank you, Mr. Blackmer.
Thank you. Members of the committee, thank you for having me back. Jamie Rawls, Secretary of State Audits Division. I'll pick up where I think we left off, which was slide two. And so we had gotten through all of this, kind of the background on why we started the audit, that it was the sixth audit since 1997. The next slide, and that we didn't see quick fixes so far in our work, in our audit work, that this was going to involve, you know, short-term quick fixes, that there was a lot of little things across the board that was going to be long-term things. So we do have four suggestions that we have gone through our process, that we have that relate back to our audit work, that are recommendations that will be in our audit report to help fix some of the problems that we'll be talking about in our audit report. So the first one is establishing a central oversight authority. I'll go into each of these in more detail in just a minute. Improve performance reporting, addressing other agency accounts at Department of Revenue, and authorizing a state vendor offset. So just as a little background, before I get into those 4 points, this comes from the LFO report numbers. Oregon's delinquent debt has rose from $1.7 billion at the end of fiscal year 2008 to $3.2 billion in the most recent LFO report. Statewide collection rates have dropped from 13.5 to 11.2. We have adjusted this a little bit. It's excluding DAS amounts. When we started digging into the collection rates in the LFO report, this is a great example of where there needs to be more analysis of what's in there. When you look at the collection rates for DAS, they have over a 90% collection rate. It's because it's mostly interagency debt. It's collected relatively quickly, and it skews the rest of the results. We also have found other errors that we're working with agencies to help identify what the source and reasons are, but one of them was a PERS error, so we also backed that out.
Ms. Rawls, before you go to the next slide, I know you started to talk about this when you were here last week, but could you remind folks and make sure, let me say what I think is the, we talked a little bit about why there's been this significant increase. It's almost double the amount of debt in 6 years. And obviously the recession played a role in people being unable to pay delinquent taxes and things like that. Otherwise, do we have a sense of any other major drivers of this significant increase?
We've been looking at the CAFR and looking to find out the answer to that. It is, recession plays a part in it, but courts, fines, and fees have gone up quite a bit in those years. Plays a pretty good part in it.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much.
So we also have looked at the allowance for doubtful accounts, which is an agency management estimate, and have determined about half of the $3.2 billion in delinquent debt may be uncollectible. So that varies across the agencies. The two big drivers of that, DOJ and OJD, both have about a 90% uncollectible or allowance for doubtful accounts. 90% of their debt they have determined is uncollectible. Employment, ODOT, and DHS, about a third of their debt they have estimated is uncollectible. DHS is about a quarter, and I think Department of Revenue is about 10%. So when you put all that together across the total, it's about half. But A 13.5% collection rate in 2014, which is where we were at in 2008, would raise an additional $87 million. So we probably will have that number in our audit report, and we will probably caveat that just so it's clear that that's not going to be grabbed upon, you know, in one simple step, but there is some opportunities to get some of the collectible debt, some of the good debt.
Can I ask you one other question about that? When you say uncollectible, is the estimate based on the fact that if you look over long, long periods of time, that kind of debt is uncollectible, or is it because we're still coming out of the recession? So, for example, if you look at the DOJ stuff, you know, are we seeing an increase in fines and therefore, you know, or penalties and therefore, and people aren't paying them, or can you talk a little bit more about that?
I think there is an increase in the fines and the fees that are happening out there with courts.
Mm-hmm.
But also, I think it is estimates, and it's different for each agency. So they all have their own methodology for how they came to that, but it is usually based on historical information. So some of it could be based on the recession and the history there. Some of it is also based on just the nature of the debt. And looking at that type of debt going back, you know, 90% hasn't been collectible. Therefore, they estimate going forward 90% won't be collectible. So it differs across the agencies, and it is an estimate. But I think that the recession plays into that.
I guess one of my concerns is, I mean, I don't know how DOJ, for example, tracks it. You know, if they've got somebody who couldn't pay a fine for a period of time or was incarcerated and couldn't pay a penalty and then got out and got a job, one would hope, then had some capacity to pay, you know, what kinds of mechanisms do they have in place to be able to track folks or businesses that need to pay fines based on civil settlements or things like that? And I also worry about the sort of contempt for the law problem, which isn't really your issue, but if 90% of the debt that's owed to DOJ is uncollectible, then what the heck do we have it for, right? I mean, that's not your issue. It's sort of a rhetorical question.
Right,
But I think it's an issue. It's kind of like, you know, if you set a speed limit that's unreasonably low and nobody obeys it, that starts to erode respect for the law, rule of law, and I have a little bit of a problem with that. It's totally rhetorical.
Right.
It's not really
no,
your
I
bailiwick.
Hear you.
But I do think it's an issue.
Yeah.
So.
So our first point of the four is to, I think I spoke on this last time, is that we really feel like there has to be a central oversight authority to make these improvements and to fix the things that we're seeing. And that's been the problem going back in other audits, is there's not that groundwork. It's like starting over from scratch every time we do an audit because no one is managing the bigger picture. And in looking at other states, that's the one big takeaway you see from those that are successful, is they have a central oversight authority, either similar to the Department of Administrative Services in their state, or it could be at the Department of Revenue type place. But there is that agency and entity that's tracking it. And we think there needs to be that transparency and improvement. I'll go into a little more detail there. Again, our discussions with other states is where we have came to that conclusion. It would help make collections a priority and improve accountability and transparency here in Oregon. DAS, we feel, in our state, is best positioned to take on that role with their enterprise-wide authority anyway over other things. And they could provide the oversight and monitoring of the collection system that would help create that long-term focus, because in the past, there's a lot of momentum after our audit report, and maybe some changes will occur, and then it drops. And then you have all the different agencies doing all sorts of different things, and no one keeping tabs on that.
Can I ask another question? So if you take an agency that says 50% of our debt, based on historical experience, is uncollectible, and then you change how you do collections, you change how it's being managed, do we have a sense from experience in other states or whatever other places that that number may drop, the uncollectible portion may drop, and therefore, so it's not just a question of improving our collection rate on the collectible part, it's right?
Right.
Okay.
So changing our practices. And yeah, the other states that are successful are forward-leaning in all areas. So it's like this multimodal attacking debt wholeheartedly. They're getting tools. They have tools that we'll describe in our audit report that are pretty innovative and forward-leaning that we don't have here in Oregon that they could be, we could be doing. They're doing vendor offset, which we're talking about, which has, you know, it does change people's perception of debt and how much debt we're accruing in the future and how much is getting collected.
And would any of those tools require, what percentage of those tools maybe are sort of technological and what percent are legislative and what can be done by rule? Do you have a sense, or will you be talking about that in your report?
We will be laying out, we're hopeful our report will be almost a step-by-step kind of to-do list for
okay.
Here's what we could
Great.
Be doing. And I would say 90% of them don't require legislative approval. The vendor offset piece, because it has to do with SSNs, needed that. But the other tools, most of them don't. They may need someone taking the lead on getting clarification with the Attorney General's office on who can have access to it and who can't. But I don't know that they will all need legislative help.
And you believe what vendor offset is addressed in Senate Bill 55?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, just for the, I mentioned it in our earlier meeting, Chair Steiner Hayward, members of the committee, we pulled out the things that were specifically related to either barriers or authorities that statute could empower better collections, and the rest of our audit is focused on the agencies and how they're managing collections, which can be done regardless of statutory changes. So
Great.
That's the part that you'll be getting when we finish this audit.
Excellent. Thank you.
So some of the things that we feel like DAS could do in that role of oversight or monitoring the state's debt would be to identify opportunities for operation improvements, help agencies implement best practices. So that's some of the things we've been doing, is visiting with the agencies, finding out what they're doing to collect debt. Some of them have some really innovative approaches that could be shared across the board, but it's not being shared. Promote debt assignment based on collection performance. This seems pretty basic. It's not occurring in all the agencies. There is no performance measure currently for agencies to even track the collection rate internally, or the collection rate of the debt that they send out to private collection firms, or the debt that they send out to Department of Revenue. And unless you have that collection rate across the board, how can you possibly assign debt out based on the performance of that? And so that's at a basic level not occurring to even get the debt out correctly. They need to be tracking and helping resolve some of the complex and legal issues. So one of the things that's not happening is some of the tools that some agencies have is access to a Department of Justice new hire report. And this is better than having access to employment wages, because it's employers have a small time frame, like 10 days, 2 weeks, to report to the Department of Justice when someone gets a job. And when you have access to that report, you immediately have access to, my debtor now has a job, I'm going to tap into that. And some agencies have access to that, and some agencies have been trying to get access to that, and it's not clear why they can't. And in other states, there are states that actually grant access to this and have gone through that process to figure that out, and it's not clear. No one's taken the lead on it here in Oregon. And then to develop standard performance metrics. Right now, again, with the collection rates that aren't being tracked across the board, another metric would be delinquency rates and looking at the percent of accounts receivable that actually become delinquent. Some agencies are doing this, I think one, and the rest I have not heard of actually looking at this measure. So DAS could be developing some of these performance metrics and looking at those across the board and making that a priority for agencies. Again, this is dealing with performance reporting, so authorizing DAS to conduct more analysis of collection operations and publicly report that out. So right now with the LFO report, they are collecting information from the agencies. It's total balance of delinquent debt, number of accounts, that kind of thing, and it's going out there each year, and that's it. There's no detailed analysis of, is the collection rates going up? Is it going down? Is overall debt going up or down? The trend analysis. And there's no detail. There's actually a lot of detail they submit over, but it's not getting put into the report. So there's room for improvement with the report, with just a little bit of effort. And I think our work with other states and some agencies have learned that when there is that reporting aspect where they know the numbers are going to be out there and they may get asked questions on it, it's incentivizing them to do a better job, and it's incentivizing them to make it a priority. Those agencies that have federal reporting measures that they're required to report out there, they get compared to the other states. And so they get called on the floor if it's lower, if they're in the top 10% of the 50 states, and they actually have to submit, you know, an action plan to improve it. And we've noticed they're more incentivized to do better with collections than the other agencies.
And what's the you're talking about us having a statewide 11.2 collection rate, percent collection rate. For states that are doing this the right way, based on your analysis, what's their collection rate?
I think we have states that are in the 20%, you know, up to 20% and higher.
Okay.
So it's hard. We've looked into this, and we would love nothing more than put a chart together that would say, here's Oregon's collection rate, here's all the other states we looked at. It's like comparing apples to oranges in some aspects. It depends on if your state has state court debt, because that weighs down the collection rate. And so we can say that ours is lower than other states, but it's not always a great equal comparison.
Thank you.
I think I talked about a lot of this. Oh, did I go backwards, actually?
Oh, you're going backwards.
I'm going backwards. So, again, I think I went over this. LFO's reports can be useful, but there's more that can be done to make it more transparent and to encourage agencies to make improvements. We think there could be a concurrent management report that comes out when the LFO report comes out that would be taking the detail from the LFO report and providing more of a management analysis. So there's that trend information, there's collection rate information, there's maybe delinquency rate, all of that, all of those things they could be doing more, explaining why debt and collection rates are going up or down. They could integrate additional metrics such as the collection rates, the debt assignment. Right now, it's not clear from looking at the report. Some agencies are exempt from sending debt out, and you can't tell from looking at the report who. And so you can't possibly draw any type of conclusion from what's in the report right now unless you have those pieces.
Statutorily exempt?
They are exempt, yeah. Statutorily, agencies can apply up to a year-long exemption to not have to send any debt out for up to a year. And so that's some agencies can do that. It makes sense. There's some agencies that have just better tools than private collection firms or Department of Revenue, other agency accounts. So they can have up to a year to try and collect, and if they don't get any payment, then they're supposed to send that out.
Looks as if it's mostly licensure boards. If I'm looking, Mr. Borden's showing me the list. It's almost all, looks like it's almost all licensure boards.
There is also some of the bigger agencies can apply for an exemption through DAS, Employment, ODOT, Department of Revenue. They have up to a year.
Okay. Thank you.
The third issue we have that needs addressed is other agency accounts. This is a kind of an issue where we've been told the reason why some agencies may not send debt over to Department of Revenue, other agency accounts, is because it's clear in statute right now that when they send debt over to a private collection firm, they can add the fee, the collection fee, to the debt total, and therefore the debtor pays that fee. But when they're sending debt out to Department of Revenue, it's not clear they can add that fee, and so the agency picks up the tab for that. And so the two are not on an even playing field. So if you are a smaller agency that doesn't have a lot of resources and debt is not your priority, we think some agencies may be sending debt, picking the private collection firm route because it's easier and less costly for them.
Senator Johnson.
I'm sorry that I was a little late and then I bopped in and out, but Are we sure, and I say this respectfully because I know they're in the room, are we sure that DOR, is the Department of Revenue, is applying all of the tools in their toolbox? I mean, I find it somewhat alarming. Now that this issue is catching fire in the building, there are lots of people talking about it. And so I've had tangential conversations with folks that say, well, we can't even check state contracts with DOR because of the use of Social Security numbers. And we've got all these people that are selling things to the state of Oregon that have tax liability. Have they policed up their own house? And I'm not expecting you to know this. This is largely rhetorical and perhaps pointed at the agency in the room. But I would want to know that as you're talking about sending collection to the Department of Revenue, I want to know that the guard dog's got some fangs. And I guess I'm just saying this to the agency in the room. Show us that you're serious. Are all the employees current with their taxes? Those kinds of things. I don't want the Department of Revenue to become our default position, and it turns out that they don't have the tools or the stamina or the commitment to make dealing with this debt a high, high, high priority. And it's not you guys' problem. I mean, I'm speaking to the agency through you.
Chair Steiner, Hayward, Senator Johnson, we are actually looking at all the agencies that are doing collections and looking at what the tools are that they're using, what their collection rates are, and Department of Revenue is one of the keys. So I think we should be able to give you some answers when our audit is actually issued around kind of the management of collections from the agency perspective.
We've gotten so hypersensitive about privacy that I think that we are doing ourselves an enormous disservice, and I'm now speaking to the doctor, when my own husband can't make medical appointments for me because my HIPAA rights might be violated. Come on. I'm having problems, and I want to make sure that somewhere in your inquiry that we at least tease these issues out.
So, Mr. Blackmore, please go ahead and then I'll add in.
Chair Steiner, Hayward, Senator Johnson, we have been frustrated with data access issues and being able to do matches. Social Security is a barrier for us also. It comes under federal law, unfortunately, as does HIPAA and FERPA, and doing the workarounds are possible, but it takes, for example, a notification whenever a business or individual submits a Social Security number that it can be used for debt collection purposes. They need to be positively informed that that could be a use of that Social Security number, and then the data matching can happen. But there's also other workarounds that are happening within agencies.
My last question, this is to the chair. I hope as these two conversations, when you guys have been here last time and again today, I think are seminal. For the first time, I think something is going to happen. We're not just talking about it. And I am relying on the co-chairs, to help get the list and enlist us as champions to go sell this to our various caucuses, to our various sides of the building. I really am optimistic that we're going to just not talk about it, but we're going to do something.
Senator Johnson, your points are very well taken. I think you may have been here the first time we talked about Senate Bill 55. I know we talked about that same time. But
I'm already collecting money to erect a statue to this woman. So.
As well you should. I'll chip in. And I completely agree with you. And I have every intention of staying, you know, reading the report, the audit, when it comes out in detail. And I think prior to you coming in the room, I asked Ms. Rawls and Mr. Blackmer, of the tools that DOR and other agencies need, you know, will they be outlining in their report which ones need statutory change, which ones are simply rules that need to be enacted, which ones are technical tools, you know, IT kinds of tools that we can implement easily? And they assured me that those things would be outlined in their report So we could have a very concrete action plan, and I completely agree with you. We are leaving money on the table that people owe to the state of Oregon, and that money should be going for services that the state needs to provide.
We're incentivizing scoff laws.
Right.
Oregonians that are writing their tax checks, I think, have an expectation that the legislature will be ruthless in going after those that don't.
You're channeling me. We're channeling each other today, because I said, seriously, because that's exactly basically what I said about my concern about the high uncollectible debt ratios that we have, about contempt for the law. My concern about that, for exactly the point that you're making. Exactly. I completely agree with you.
If I may just add one thing, Co-Chair Senator Hayward and Senator Johnson. So with respect to Department of Revenue, there will be some, you know, recommendations directed at them and improvements. I think one big thing that we're addressing here is the vendor offset, and that's one tool no one has access to because of the SSN issue, and it is frustrating that there's all these hoops. You would think that if someone owes you money, and the state money, and you're writing a check to them in another area, that you'd be able to collect that debt. And other states are doing that better, and that's where Oregon has not been as forward-leaning in that regard. So I think that's a huge tool that a lot of agencies want, DOR included, and would like to be doing, but they can't until law is passed on that, or you know, improvements are made there. There's other tools, like I was mentioning, the Department of Justice access to the new hire report. I know Department of Revenue in our audit has been looking into that and trying to get access to that, and seems to be hitting some stumbling points on that. So that would be another area that a lot of agencies would like access to and can't seem to figure out, you know, how that needs to be facilitated.
One other comment, Surely. Madam Chair. This is a comment not for you guys, but hopefully somebody out there in Department of Administrative Services land is listening. In my observation of how government works, we have not empowered, or DAS has not empowered, state agency heads to come forward. There is not a culture or a tradition of state agency heads coming forward and pointing at programs that are no longer efficacious, at statutory impediments that make them doing their job more difficult rather than less. And I know that a state agency head would be loath to come to the legislature and say, you heap so much stuff on us, we can't do our job anymore. But some mechanism by which to enlist the people that are closest to the ground to help point out those places where processes could be streamlined, but for, and to try to inculcate a culture that says it's okay to point this stuff out. We've got all these executive teams meeting for God only knows what. Wouldn't it be nice if one of those committees actually teased out best practices and there was some methodology to get that information to the legislature? But you guys don't have to respond. I'm just whining.
Chair Steiner, Hayward, Senator Johnson, if I could whine back, we actually have issued audits where we have pointed out where they need to set, an agency needs to set priorities in terms of the duties of its workforce. Some of them are mandated by statute, and they are actually a lesser priority than others, but because it's statutorily required, they have to do it. So, and I'm talking Child Protective Services here. It was an area where we saw that the workload was much higher than the workforce could handle, and part of the workload was statutorily required. And when we looked at those activities, we recommended the agency that they set priorities with the idea that maybe they could come back to the legislature and say, you know, we have limited time. Do we really need to do this? Can we make this where it's discretionary? So, and it didn't happen. And I guess I share the same feeling you do, that I think a good communication between agencies and the legislature about what's working and not working in the statutes would make their jobs easier and give you a better sense of what's working and not.
One tool that just occurred to me, and I'm not just pandering to Representative Taylor and you, Ms. Rawls, but it occurs to me, having received management letters back in my old life when I actually ran a for-profit company, you'd have auditors come in and take a look at. Those audit letters are enough to give you a real jolt sometimes. And I'm wondering whether or not the chairs of the subs, when we have the opportunity to meet with the co-chairs, could ask as part of the regular presentation if there is a management letter that has been issued within a certain period of time to an agency, that it be included for committee review prior to the time that they come in to have their budget finally worked on. I would love to see a management letter that had been ignored. And because you guys are so quiet and kind of under the radar when you do these audits, you got to go spelunking to find them. But if you had management letters, particularly negative ones, if there was room for correction presented to the committee, I bet you there'd be a few come to Jesus minutes with that one.
I think that's a really interesting idea. And since I have my co-chairs meeting with the sub-co-chairs meeting with the big co-chairs at 2:45, that will be on the agenda. So thank you.
Thanks.
Okay, let's rock and roll.
Okay, let's see. Talking about just making it even playing field for sending debt over to private collection firms and to Department of Revenue, the debt. So we are, it's a point in our audit report that it should be clarified in statute. Agencies should be allowed to add the fee to the debt before they send it to the Department of Revenue, just like they do when they send it over to a private collection firm. That way that is not a decision factor in where they send debt. The other last bullet here is allowing local government to send debt to OAA for offset against tax refunds. A lot of states that have a Department of Revenue function like we do have local government debt that's going to them as well, just even for the offset. So it's basically a file transfer that goes out to the Department of Revenue. It's no one maintains it. It sits out there waiting for a tax return to
pop up.
Yeah.
And then it just automatically, the funds get automatically transferred.
It's all automatic.
See, that's really smart too, because if the counties or cities have the money that they're supposed to have, then that means we have to give them less money too.
Exactly.
To support things that they need to do.
Right. I think I went over all this. Just adding the fees makes them on even playing fields, and then refund offset is a proven method of debt collection. It's a kind of a no-brainer with debt collection. If you have a tax refund that's coming in and you have a debt sitting out there to grab that, that makes a lot of sense, and there's not a lot of effort that goes into it.
So do we have, because we don't, so if I hear you correctly, because we don't have a central agency coordinating all this debt collection, it's, I know that DOR does offset, for example, when those gosh darn kicker tax credits go out, they'll be offsets there for some of the debt. But other agency debt doesn't necessarily get offset, right, if DOR doesn't know about it and they don't have an agreement to do collections for that agency. Is that correct?
Steiner Hayward, most agencies do, they should be, they have the choice or are directed to at 90 days when it's delinquent and liquidated to send the debt either to private collection firm or to Department of Revenue for full collections. That full collection piece at Department of Revenue includes the offset.
Okay.
And so if they're sending it to the Department of Revenue, they would be getting that offset component. If they're just sending it out to a private collection firm, they can also simultaneously send it to Department of Revenue for their restricted program, which means it just sits out there, and they can do them at the same time. We are learning in our audit that not a lot of agencies are aware of that, so it is a missed opportunity. And yes, some agencies don't have their debt over at Department of Revenue, and so that's a missed opportunity if they're not sending it over for restricted or for full collection, which includes the offset.
Okay.
The last piece that we have is to authorize state vendor offset, allow agencies to offset payments to state vendors against their debt. So this is different than tax offset. This is the vendor offset piece that would be, currently our state has the ability to do federal offset. And we also have this tax offset, but we aren't doing state to state, state debt to state payments. And that's where a lot of agencies and other states do this. And this was recommended back in 1997. So we did some work on this, and At a very basic level, we got the download of the Department of Administrative's vendor list, which includes all of the active vendors. So my understanding, if you're on that list as a vendor, you've received a payment in the last couple of years anyway, or are currently receiving payments. And we matched that to the Department of Revenue's data. So that included Department of Revenue debt, tax debt, as well as any other agencies that are sending debt over to the Department of Revenue for collection purposes. And we found 9,140, I believe, debtors that are also vendors of the state. From there, we went on and tried to determine when did the payment occur, when did the debt occur, when did the payment occur, how much would we have been able to capture. And it was going back 4 years. It's about $1 million to $2 million a year. However, that was a pretty conservative approach that we did. So if the payment came in 2012, we looked to see if there was any payment in 2013, 14, or 15. So it wasn't down to the month or day. And it's not including all of state debt. It was just a portion of the state's debt.
And that 9,100 is both businesses and individuals?
Yes. At least 29 states have implemented state vendor offset to improve collections on businesses. That's just businesses. And then 40 states have developed a state vendor offset program for individuals.
Stop there for just a second.
Yeah. Hey, for a moment, if you would please, Ms. Rawls.
I'm not sure, Ms. Rawls, I understand for individuals, vendor offset. How does that work?
So that would be individual vendors, not businesses, those that don't have an EIN. So you are a, like an LLC, private entity that's doing business with the state, not a business.
Thank you.
So receiving some kind of check from the state. You don't even have to be a contractor, but somehow you're receiving checks from the state and you're an individual and not an EIN, not a business. Am I going forward? I can't tell. There we go. So we have issued five, as I mentioned before, five prior audits on collections. This would be our sixth. To date, many of the recommendations we proposed in prior audits have either not been fully implemented or have been raised as concerns in the current audit work, which we will hopefully be talking about and discussing in our audit report.
So can I ask you a question about that? As Senator Johnson pointed out, there's a lot of interest from this committee in helping you help others. And Senate Bill 55 will be a big help. The recommendations in your report will be a big help. But what's the best way for this committee and others who are concerned to work with you on an ongoing basis to ensure that history does not repeat itself for the sixth time? And that we get the vast majority of these recommendations implemented in as expeditious a way as possible.
Do you want to answer that, Gary?
Chair Steiner Hayward, that's a good question. Sometimes they get implemented and then they fall by the wayside.
I understand.
Sometimes they're in process for years and never get completed. And I guess to the degree that, we'll be around, we'll be auditing in the future and doing follow-up, and we can certainly report out the results of our follow-up in these areas. And I mean, that's one of the things that I think is an advantage of auditors, is we're out there finding out what's really happening as opposed to what you're being told in a hearing room like this.
That's exactly my point. And I think I'd like to have another conversation with you offline, maybe after it may be after your report gets issued, about how do we think about helping all these recommendations get implemented as expeditiously as possible and sustained. Mm-hmm. Because frankly, I'm tired of leaving money on the table and I'm tired of the scofflaw issue, as Senator Johnson and I have both been talking. And I'm committed to making sure that if there's money owed to the state that we need for program, especially in these pretty lean economic times and that are only going to get worse, frankly, due to the PERS decision, and we'll probably do for another recession soon. So, say I being all doom and gloom. Yeah, Senator Johnson.
I was shocked to find out there's gambling in Casablanca. That we're not hearing the whole truth in these hearing rooms. Shocked.
Chair Steiner here and Senator Johnson, that's another audit we're working on.
This is like catnip for me. That's a wonderful thing.
Thank you. Well, and let me follow up a little more on your issue, Chair Steiner Hayward.
I know, I'm sorry. It's a long name and it's complicated, and I apologize. Madam Chair will do.
Again, accountability and being a champion for collections is, I think, a key to this, and that DAS needs to be kind of put into that position and given the resources it needs to carry it out and to be able to report in all complexity that you would like how they're doing and get straight data. And they're not necessarily the key collections agency, so they have a certain amount of independence and over kind of that overview of state collections for all agencies.
I think I'll also have another conversation with Mr. Naughton and Mr. Pack and whoever Mr. Naughton's successor is about this issue, because assuming we pass Senate Bill 55, which I assume we will, that will happen, that DAS will become the central agency responsible, and then the question's going to be, how are they going to help implement it, how are they going to hold people accountable, and what can the legislature do to help them in that effort? Because it's worth investing resources. I mean, if I'm listening correctly, there's on the order of at least $100 million that you can identify like that, even at between the 11.7 and the 13.2 collection rate, and the vendor offsets and things like that. So, Senator Johnson.
The hiring criteria for the next DAS director is going to be incredibly important, and I don't know who all will be party to that, but certainly not just giving them the tools, but expect the culture of accountability where this is a high priority. This isn't just another thing we're supposed to do. I think many of us have labored under the illusion that DAS is the more equal agency among equal agencies and is expected to set a leadership direction for other agencies. If it doesn't matter to DAS, it's sure not going to matter to some little board and commission someplace. Madam Chair, while we're taking this little break, tell me about the audit that you're doing with respect to presented testimony. Were you serious? When I was joking about not hearing the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth in these hearing rooms, and you said we're doing an audit, pull back the curtain on that. I mean,
Chair Steiner Hayward, Senator Johnson, I apologize. We're actually doing an audit of Oregon Lottery. There is... There is gambling going on.
Sorry,
it's not quite on the scale of what you were thinking.
Not so much catnip. Interesting, but thank you.
Okay. Here's a list of the previous audit recommendations that have been recommended related to this topic, but is still room for improvement. Implementing vendor offset, expanding access to reports of new hires, increase access to collection tools, address insufficient staffing and large caseloads. Again, on that note, there is not a clear report or information on caseload of collection staff out there, which is directly tied to collection performance. And in some aspects, I'm not sure that all the agencies would have that figure. Again, it's an improvement. It's an area that could be improved, just tracking large caseloads and if there's areas where those could be reduced, which would increase performance, collection performance. Improving evaluation of private collection firm performance. I would have to add, in addition to that, the performance of debt that's sent over to Department of Revenue. It goes back to that tracking of collection rates of debt they send out and comparing those collection rates and seeing who's doing better with what types of debt and getting those facts and figures so they can assign it in the best possible way. Implement a state accounts receivable performance measure. We don't have one. And periodically review written off accounts. There's some agencies that have large account write-offs, and it would be in their best interest to keep looking at those periodically, and we've recommended that in the past.
Excellent.
I think That's all I have.
And you've been getting lots of those all the way through. First of all, thank you. This is really hard work, and it's really critical for the state. And, I mean, in general, Mr. Blackmore, you know how grateful we are to the excellent work that you and your team do in the Audits Division. And in particular, this is an issue that has significant concern. I mean, that's why we asked Representative Taylor, who is obviously well-known to all of you, and Senator Whitsitt to work on this issue, and why we wanted you here talking with us now, even before the final report was out, and why we're excited about Senate Bill 55. I sincerely hope, and I will personally commit, as long as I'm here, to make sure that this is not, you don't, some your successors or you are not back here in 4 to 6 years saying, and we've done this 6 times before and nothing's happened. I think we're past that point, as Senator Johnson said. And I just want to let you know how grateful I am to you for your very clear recommendations and for your diligence in looking at this in a very comprehensive way. And I look forward to reading the report and continuing to work with you. Are there other questions at this point? Thank you both so much for your time and for your flexibility, as our schedule has been rather complicated this session. Okay, Mr. Borden, anything else for us today?
Madam Chair and members of the subcommittee, no. Tomorrow you're off to the completion of phase two for the State Treasurer's Office.
Great.
Cool.
And I would remind the committee that we will be completing phase two for a range of agencies over the next week or so. We'll also start having some more substantive policy bills. Senate Bill 777 is up next week for an public hearing. We won't be working a lot of these bills yet, but we will be starting to have some public hearings. And because of how things are structured, because bills that come from one chamber, two ways and means, are not seen by the House, I'm going to urge everybody on the committee, and we'll be reminding committee members to try really hard to read the bills ahead of time, so that if there are issues, we have an opportunity to address them. While we try not to do policy in ways and means too much, sometimes it's necessary, and we do need members, especially from the opposite chamber, to understand the bills that are coming before us. So I'm just encouraging everybody to start keeping an eye out for policy bills, reading ahead. We'll let you know, as we know, as things start to come up, but we're just going to ask your help in being prepared for these hearings so we can have useful, productive public hearings on these substantive bills. Anything else for the committee, folks? Ms. Jensen, anything else? Okay, we are adjourned. See everybody tomorrow. Cool. Everybody tomorrow.